Live from CAP Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. The word mega flood has sparked many conversations and thought-provoking worst-case scenarios this week. The research that took off across the country was published in the journal Science Advances, predicting that climate change is increasing the risk of a California megastorm, the likes of which we haven't seen in intensity before, with devastating impacts that will touch every corner of the state. And the chances of it happening within our lifetime is becoming more likely as the planet continues to warm. Climate scientist Daniel Swain and Xinying Wang are the co-authors of this research. Both are highly respected in their field and have penned their fair share of research published in scientific journals. But this publication has inundated them with responses. I spoke briefly with Dr. Wang about the attention it received in just the first 48 hours. The amount of attention that this research received, I mean, it's across the country, globally, of course, California. I was listening to a Twitter forum, I believe on Monday. It had like more than 1,000 people tune in just, you know, the first couple hours. Are you surprised by the attention that this research has received?
Yeah, that's a great question. I would say, yes, I am kind of surprised. Like, it gets got so much attention, either from media interest or the broader audience. But I'm glad that this work turned out to be impactful, because that's our goal, like, for this work to be known by a broad audience.
Dr. Wang added that the goal of the research was to be solution-oriented, not to be alarmist or apocalyptic, because there's a great deal we can do to prepare for extreme weather events, including megastorms. And this research is part of that preparation. California Department of Water Resources, DWR, helped fund the research. So to better understand what is being forecasted and what can be done, I'm joined by Michael Anderson, a state climatologist with DWR, and Jeffrey Mount, a senior fellow with the Public Policy Institute of California, PPIC. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, yep. Jeffrey, I want to start with you. You're at PPIC now, but you were the founding director for the Center of Watershed Sciences at UC Davis. This is right up your alley. What struck you about the research released over the weekend?
Well, there's a couple things, and Mike will back me up on this. We've been talking about this for some time. Research of this type has been rolling out over the last 4 or 5 years that suggests that we're looking at, along with this wildly variable climate, which we're looking at right now, an increased intensity of runoff and these storms. In fact, I think Daniel Swain published a paper about 4 years ago that said this. This paper just honed that message. So yes, we've been aware of this for some time. Again, Mike can give you the details on all of this, but it is not that we do not know that we can have a very large flood in this system. It isn't just the big one in 1861 and 62, but there's a paleo record that suggests even larger floods can occur here. So we are flood prone. And this just basically confirms it, and it's just becoming more likely.
Right. Megastorms that go back centuries. I imagine that on the USGS site, Arc Storm is kind of going up on the Google search engine this week. All right. Well, climatologist Anderson, Michael, what struck you about the research, given that this is far, far from the first type of research looking into climate change and severe weather, flooding in this case?
Right. So as Jeff mentioned, we've been aware of this challenge for a while, but it's zeroing in on a scenario, a plausible scenario that incorporates elements of climate change into it that we can work with. So in this case, it's not just running, a single scenario through, but this one also includes uncertainty around that scenario. So you can actually work with it as if it were weather forecasts. And that's a key part of flooding, is having that capability. So this is a really unique and awesome element of this research, that it helps us move forward from just recognizing there's a problem to being able to practice and figure out how you deal with floods that go from big to really big into the mega flood category.
Yeah, and I think just for myself, a non-climatologist, non-scientist, it really helped me visualize the effects of climate change in a different way, perhaps allowed us to visualize it in a way that kind of directly impacts our lives and happening in our backyards, because there isn't an area in the state that would be left out if this event took place. Do you think that's what set this research apart, that it reached such a broad audience outside of the scientific field? Michael?
Yes, and that's actually a good thing, and work that we're going to continue doing as we move it from a storm into actually working it through to what the flood might look like. And again, getting that visual material that helps you understand what might happen, which begins the ability to prepare for it, including every individual who can recognize their risk and take actions to reduce it.
Jeffrey, how can climate scientists accurately model projections into the future, really, when it comes to the scale of which we've never experienced before?
So Mike said something which I think is really important. And it's basically what's nice about the work that Dr. Huang and Swain did was that they give you error bars, uncertainties. They can't predict the future. They cannot. They cannot tell you. I mean, called my colleague Jay Lund at UC Davis repeatedly says, all models are wrong. Some are more useful than others. And in this case, they can't predict the future, but they can give you a range of probabilities about what's likely to happen in the future. And that's what's really useful for people like Mike and the folks at DWR who are looking at flood management overall, I mean, particularly here in the Central Valley, where it's one of the most flood-prone areas in the nation. This range of values that are created allows you to plan and plan for infrastructure. However, I do want to say it's important that your listeners understand we cannot afford to build infrastructure that would prevent damaging flooding of this scale. I mean, basically, a lot of it is emergency response is the way you deal with this. There is going to be widespread damage when these mega floods appear. It's simply too expensive to build walls and more reservoirs and everything else to prevent flooding from those particular floods. We can reduce the damages, okay, with good planning. Good land use planning, good emergency response. We can reduce loss of life, but we're going to see floods. I mean, we're going to see significant floods when these mega floods come along.
For people who have lived through severe flooding and atmospheric rivers, I mean, going back to 97, to the 80s, what is going to be different about this atmospheric river or series of atmospheric rivers? Because California is familiar with this and has been home to major flooding and severe weather in past decades and centuries. But this prediction is that, and as you're laying out as well, be unlike what we've experienced in the past. How does a warming climate contribute to this?
Well, there are two pieces to this particular event that we see elements of in history, but start compounding. And the first is size. A warmer atmosphere can hold more water. With an atmospheric river, that air is warmer than the storm that it's wrapped into. Now, you also have California's fantastic mountains that lift the air and cool it. So the cooling, by lifting the cooling from the storm that the atmospheric river is wrapped into, is a great way to squeeze water out of the atmosphere and onto the landscape. If you've ever been driving and you start uphill while it is raining, you notice it starts raining a lot harder. That's that orographic effect in action. In this case, in climate change, that happens more. It happens longer. If you look at the scenario presented in this research, it's 30 days of repeated atmospheric rivers where it just continues on and on and on. Now, in 2019, we saw two Category 4 atmospheric rivers impact the coastal range within the month of February, led to extreme flooding in Guerneville, as well as flooding on some of the lee side streams that feed into the Central Valley. So we see elements of it in a little bit, but if you start compounding that and extending it over a whole month, that's when the challenges transition from a big flood into a mega flood.
Jeffrey, when you look back at 97, what are the learning lessons from that could be applied to this approaching, you know, TBD series of atmospheric rivers?
Well, so we learned a couple lessons, and you have to go back to 1986 when we came within minutes of losing Sacramento. when the Auburn Dam cofferdam failed in 1986, and we discovered that our flood defenses were not just bad, they were horrible. I mean, they really were. It produced Sacramento a tremendous risk. 97 reinforced that issue, the risk issue, throughout the Central Valley. And you'll remember that in the Schwarzenegger administration, we really sort of woke up to the liability associated with this, the state's liability. And we've modernized our requirements, our flood requirements in the Central Valley. But here's the takeaway I want to leave with you, Vicki, and your listeners. When you look outside your door at the levee that's nearby, and in particularly in the Sacramento area, they are basically using a statistical probability of the frequency and magnitude of flooding, and an extraordinary effort in Sacramento to come up with a flood which would have the probability of 1 in 200 in a given year.
So about a half a percent.
Yeah, so they're going to call it the 200-year flood. So that doesn't mean it occurs every 200 years. You can have four of them in a year. So there's the problem that research points out to us. We're basing that analysis on historical conditions, and things are changing, and they're changing rapidly. So what used to be 200-year level of protection in the past is certainly not that today. And that's something that Mike and all the folks at DWR grapple with every day, is trying to think about, you know, how to forecast out in the future, what it might be, and how to develop our infrastructure and land use planning around that shifting target of increasing risk.
Well, Mike, given that you're a state climatologist at DWR partly funded this research, what conversations have been taking place among your colleagues since the research was published?
So we're anticipating the research. We've been working with researchers over the past 2 years while they've been doing the modeling. So now we're excited because now we have the scenario in hand. And so here's where the real footwork starts, which is then taking that, doing some additional modeling to begin to understand its impact on the flood infrastructure in the state and identify where the challenges lie. But in a catastrophic scenario, it's understanding going from big to bad to mega flood, and understanding the scaling of disaster response that happens from a local to a state response to a federal response, and understanding how to do that and know what the signs are. That's one of the real keys to effective emergency response. So we're working on developing exercises that we can do where we sit around the table and you read a scenario and you talk about what you do, who you'd contact. And you get all the partners in the emergency response field together for the day to do these things. And really looking forward to getting all the information together so we can kind of work through that, look at the consequences, and find out what goes well, what needs work. Once you get your what needs work, there's your to-do list. And then you start tackling what we can do.
Yeah. I would be remiss to not acknowledge what we're all experiencing right now, because we're having this conversation amid a heat wave of triple digit temperatures, ongoing drought conditions. So some people might be scratching their heads about a megastorm and mega flooding amid low water years that we're all becoming accustomed with. And when I was speaking with Dr. Wang, one of the researchers behind this, you know, she just explained that, you know, drought, wildfire, extreme floods, they're all connected when you're talking about climate change. You know, extreme flooding can increase the severity of debris, flash flooding in the vicinity of high intensity wildfire burns, loss of water, heavy runoff flows. I mean, it's a web. They're not all siloed and existing in vacuums. How does that challenge the solutions that you and your colleagues at DWR are trying to come up with?
It works with education, getting everybody to understand that it's not just one or the other. We're now in the and category, where you get cascading extremes and hazards that have to be dealt with. And so awareness is the first step, and then trying to navigate your way through as Mother Nature presents different opportunities to learn, which we've certainly seen. We came off the second driest year in the observed record last year. We got to October and we had a Category 5 atmospheric river. Where the strongest part of the atmospheric river just happened to be at the Golden Gate, the opening in the coastal range that allowed all the moisture to flow through right into the Central Valley. We had rivers that had been really low jump 10 to 15 feet with a single storm. And that was just over a couple of days. So elements are there. It's just making sure we're ready when everything comes together.
Yeah, Jeffrey, I mean, the way Michael is explaining it, it's kind of like you're just trying to keep your head above water, but the water just keeps getting higher and higher, and other items and debris are piling on top of it. I mean, from your perspective at PPIC, I guess, how do you kind of catch a breath or a break when you're inundated with all of these extreme events?
Yeah, so this is the signature of changing climate here in California, and that is the, you can call it global weirding if you like for a phrase, but I mean just we are just dealing with increasing extremes. Our dries are getting drier because of atmospheric changes that are going on, and our wets are getting wetter, and that is managing Mike deals with this every day. Managing both ends of the extreme spectrum is absolutely necessary. This conversation we're having about drought, this is kind of a nice break that we're talking about flooding for a change. But the fact is, droughts end with wet years. Look at 2017. You know, that was one of the wettest years on record that year. And by the way, part of the reason we didn't have lots of flooding that year is nature spaced out the atmospheric rivers that hit, they didn't pile them in like they did in 1861 and 62 or in 97 or in 86. We spread them out. Otherwise, we'd have seen a lot of flooding in 2017. So while we are preparing for drought, we are at the same time preparing for wet. So we have to take advantage of the wet, do a much better job of taking advantage of the wet to help prepare for the dry. And then there's the too wet. So there's no Goldilocks moment in California water. I can tell you that. There's no such thing as normal in California water.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio, and if you're just joining us, I'm speaking with Michael Anderson, a state climatologist with California Department of Water Resources, and Jeffrey Mount with the Public Policy Institute of California about research predicting a mega flood and mega storm across California, possibly within this century. Michael, I have seen you up at Phillips Station in El Dorado County, one of the many snow survey sites across the state. I have been to them many, many times. And what we're learning, especially in recent years, you know, snow is becoming less dependable. However, rainfall may take its place at higher elevations. How does this complicate storage and flood management for DWR?
Right. So we have a flood infrastructure and the water resources infrastructure built on the idea that we have a nice, healthy winter snowpack that holds the water from those winter storms and then slowly releases it in the spring, which then provides water through our hot, dry summers. As climate continues to warm, the snow line starts moving uphill. You start getting a larger zone where it may snow, but the snow doesn't stick around all winter. So then you have larger areas above the reservoirs that get rain and contribute runoff right away. And so you're having to manage more water in the wintertime to manage flood hazard, while at the same time having less water available in the spring to manage for supply. So there are a lot of elements to work at to try and adapt to that. One is to work with using forecasts to inform reservoir operations, to understand the timing of arrival of water and its management and where you can place it. The other part is looking at headwater restoration that might slow down the water so that it's not running off immediately, but maybe takes a little longer to work its way through in a way that can't quite match what snowpack used to do, but can certainly help prevent the massive peak of runoff that can be challenging to manage through the reservoir systems.
Any idea if our current water infrastructure, I mean, the State Water Project is the nation's largest state-owned water project. It spans two-thirds the length of California, collection of canals, pipelines, reservoirs, and hydroelectric power facilities. We don't really have to go too far back to learn a hard lesson with Oroville and the spillway. I've walked on the spillway after it was reconstructed. We're talking about a megastorm in the coming decades, possibly, that is going to be unlike that near record year in 2017. What conversations is happening at DWR when it comes to this water infrastructure and making it as sustainable as possible for something that is projected to be unprecedented?
Right. So you have lessons learned become your to-do list. And part of that is aligning local, federal, state interests to get the advocacy and resources that you need to make sure that the infrastructure you have performs the way you expect it to. The second element is to understand those times when storms go from manageable to unmanageable. And a lot of work happening with the Central Valley Flood Protection Plan, which has an update due this year, actually looked at that, looking at reservoir vulnerability and looking at how the way reservoirs manage plays a big role in what happens on the valley floor. So really excited for that work. Also, again, setting the stage for the to-do list. And then you see investments made with federal dollars, working in partnership with state dollars, with local dollars to really help improve the system. So,
hey, Jeffrey, I want to go back to what you said in the beginning. I mean, do you think the water infrastructure will be capable of withstanding something like this, what these researchers are predicting?
No, I mean, I'm perfectly clear on that. I want to remind you that our water infrastructure was basically designed for the mid-20th century. That's when we built most of it, most of that infrastructure, and when we built most of our flood infrastructure, although we've upgraded the flood infrastructure in some areas. It's still pretty creaky is the best way to describe it. And that's the big lesson from Oroville as we watched that spillway fail. And, you know, now the second largest evacuation in the history of California. It is a reminder that we tend to think of our big gray hulking infrastructure as permanent without needing constant updating and upgrading. Well, we do. Right now we're obsessed with drought, but we're going to have to take a hard look at the infrastructure upgrades needed to basically face this increasing risk. And Vicky, I want to leave you with a thought. When I read that paper, I kept saying to myself, you know, how likely is this to happen? And what they're showing in that paper is the increasing probability. Let me leave you with this. When I read that paper, it is more likely, let's say by 2050, it is more likely that we will have that mega flood than not likely. You know, that's greater than 50-50 odds that during that period, we will see that mega flood. That's got to scare flood managers in the basin, that's something that probability is basically increasing. So we got to pay attention to this, but it's hard to do when people are sweating bullets over a drought.
So, Jeffrey, what do you want Californians to take away from this? A lot of them are probably thinking, what can I do to prepare?
Well, first of all, is keep pressure on people like Mike. Sorry, but you know, you have to have, now, Mike's not the right guy, but keep pressure on your politicians to continue to keep this. It is really hard. I mean, you know, everybody's a hydrologist the day after a flood. And nobody is except Mike the day before. And it's just really hard to keep people focused on what it's going to take, because it's going to take a lot of money, a lot of state, federal, and local cooperation. It's going to be counties willing not to make mistakes in land use planning. That's the number one tool. Don't put people in harm's way. But there's a lot of pressure to, Natomas is of course the poster child for all of that. Just don't build where you are at high risk in these systems. So it takes a tremendous amount of cooperation. And the other thing is that you can't fix this overnight. It's a multi-decadal process of planning and investment and cooperation. And that's where the local taxpayer is really important, keeping pressure on.
Michael, any last thoughts? What do you want Californians to take away from this? We have about 30 seconds.
All righty. So be prepared. Learn about ready, set, go in terms of being ready to evacuate, knowing the signs, paying attention to the folks that can give you the information to be ready. The more the locals are ready, the better the state is.
Michael Anderson is a state climatologist with California Department of Water Resources, and Jeffrey Mount is a senior fellow with the Public Policy Institute of California. Thank you both for joining us this morning.
Thanks, Vicky.
Thank you.
Up next, we'll learn about a NASA instrument capable of zeroing in on patches of Earth smaller than a football field to better understand and predict wildfire severity across California. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicky Gonzalez.